challenging and emotional songs.
I hope they make us stop and think about who we are, what we are about. Certainly, they should draw within us a knowledge and understanding that we are entirely dependent upon God, even though we have to fulfill our responsibilities. And to some degree, that can lead us directly into what we're going to talk about this morning. As I mentioned to, I think the class last Sunday night, I started to say Wednesday night, but I wasn't here Wednesday night, so, doing a lesson this morning titled A Letter to the Church, or Letter to the Church. I didn't put the A up there, did I? The text that I read this morning is from the Apostle Paul at the close of his second letter to the Corinthian brethren, and makes mention that this is the third time. So whether he's counting the time he spent there, and then the first letter and the second letter, or whether he's saying there was another letter he wrote that we don't have, we don't know. But his point is, I've told you this, and I've told you this, and now I'm telling you this again. And some of you still haven't heard. Some of you still don't understand. In the book of Revelation, we have a series of seven letters written to churches in Asia. And at least one of those churches, we know, had had instruction multiple times from multiple men. Paul was there. We studied that in the book of Acts. Paul wrote to them in the Ephesian letter. And then we go and we read in the letters that Paul wrote to Timothy, and we find that Timothy was there. There's rumors that John had been there. Solid rumors. That John had been there. There's some thoughts that maybe even Peter had gone through there. Apollos had been there. And now when John writes the Revelation, Jesus says, start with this. I need to tell these folks some stuff. So letters to churches are not extraordinary. They're not something out of the ideas of what were done in the first century. I mean, Paul's got a series of what? I didn't count them up. I mean, there's 27 books in the New Testament, and there's four Gospels, a history, and a future, and the rest of them are letters. Y'all do the math. I'm standing up talking. It doesn't work well when I try to do that. Letters to churches are helpful. So, this morning we're going to kind of look at what might be a letter to us. And I'm going to start this with a statement. I am not Paul. Y'all knew that already, don't I? Certainly not Jesus. I am, at least in my understanding, as much a member of this congregation and need the letter as much as any of us do. But there has been a little bit of extra responsibility placed upon me in regards to the need for teaching. And I feel that. And I feel that very strongly with this congregation because I have a history with this congregation. Well, I have a history with part of this congregation. This group that meets here now is not the same group that started way back in the early to mid-80s. And while I know some things about why this group came about and how some of that happened, I was just coming out of my teenage years and I was more interested in family and work. And wasn't living with mom and dad. We weren't living here. So I've got bits and pieces. I don't know the details. And I do know that there are only five people who are part of this group that were a part of the group that left the old Wilson Street congregation. Mostly because of folks passing away. Others generally attributed to moving off. And I do know that in 1987 the building was built, but I also know that the church was built long before that. This was a church before the building was here. And in the early 90s, my wife and I moved here. We had one child at the time. We lived here for 6 years. During that time, well, from that time, those five are still the only ones. But during that time, we worked and worshiped with the congregation. And toward the end of that time, in 95 and early 96, I was the regular preacher for this congregation. And I've been here this time since 2012. And I don't mention those things to say really anything about me other than I have some familiarity with individuals in the congregation. And with the congregation as a whole, with what it has done, what it is trying to do, where it stands, why it stands as it does. And I can say that about 14 of those who are members here now were also members here when we moved here in 2012. And I may be off a digit or two in my numbers. But this congregation has a history, and that history is a history that can be looked at and see how this group has done. And I'll tell you this, as we're talking about that history, there are at least three men, counting myself, who are full-time preachers. At least partly, if not fully, as a result of being members of this congregation. I think all three of us were at the very least prompted to go into full-time preaching because of our time here with the congregation at Tanner Street. And I'm not afraid to name them, Matt Allen, Greg Groves, and myself. And if you want to add in some of the young people that grew up here for a little short while, we could add a few more if we wanted to. I don't know that influence on the sons of Tom and Terry Thornhill would amount to a whole lot. They were kind of little when they left here. But I just mention that because it gives us a little bit of history of what this congregation is, where they stand, what they've done, because this congregation has been here, and I have to stop and think about this, almost 40 years. Almost 40 years. And as far as I know, there's been no major controversy. No large divisions. I know there were some difficulties through the years. But I think looking back and considering that history is important for us. It helps us to get established in the group we're talking about to some degree. And I think we see evidence of that in the epistles that Paul writes and in even to some degree the letters that Jesus writes in the beginning of the book of Revelation. And as we read there in 2 Corinthians 13, the apostle Paul said, I've known you for a long time. I'm writing to you for the third time. And most of us are familiar with the history of this congregation, at least the last 10 to 15 years. But when Jesus wrote to the churches, of course, he wrote with full knowledge. Now, he wrote with the purpose of preparing them for persecution that was coming. And so in the very beginning of the book of Revelation, John's writing establishes who Jesus is, who it is that's writing. And again, I'm not coming at this from the standpoint of I can look and I can see things that you can't see, and therefore I'm the best one to talk about these things. I'm not. Jesus was. But I think from some of the things that he speaks of in the book of Revelation to those letters, we can see some of the things that we need to consider about ourselves. And I want us to note that John, he starts off with describing Jesus, and in verse 8, we've got that phrase, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. And I want to read that and emphasize that because that reminds us that God not only has been here, not only is here, but He will always be here. And so whatever watching God is doing, it's never going to end as long as we're here on this earth. And that one who is everywhere and every when and every how as well told John, write what you see in a book and send it to these seven churches. And in addition to this description of his glory that we read in Revelation chapter 1 beginning in verse 12, John is told to describe him as one who is in the midst of the churches. When John heard that voice, he turned to see who was speaking, and he saw seven golden lampstands. In the midst of the lampstands, one like the Son of God, a Son of Man, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash around his chest. The hairs of his head were white like white wool, like snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze, refined in a fiery furnace, and his voice was like the roar of many waters. In his right hand he held the seven stars. From his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword, and his face was like the shining sun in full strength. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead, but he laid his right hand on me and said, fear not, for I'm the first and the last and the living one. I died, and behold, I am alive evermore. I have the keys of death and Hades. I'll tell you what, when I read that, John turns and he sees this one, and it's just so overwhelming. He just falls immediately on his face to the ground. And Jesus reached over and touched him and said, don't be afraid. And you would think after that, that Jesus would say, here's some things to make you feel better. But the description that Jesus gives of himself after he says, fear not, is fearsome in and of itself. First and the last, I live, I died, I live forever, and I got the keys of death and Hades. Those things don't calm me down about this individual. But Jesus still says, fear not. I think that's an important message for us. I know it affects me, and I hope it affects you when you read that, that here's this one who has all the power, who has everything, who knows and does and experiences and has in his hands and walks within striking distance, me. And he says, don't be afraid. I think he's telling us, you don't need to fear me. You don't need to be afraid of me because you're mine. Write therefore the things you've seen, those that are and those that are to take place after this. For as for the mystery of the seven stars that you saw in my right hand and the seven golden lampstands, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven lampstands are the seven churches. I hold the messengers in my hand, and I walk among the churches. But because he says, fear not, because he says, write so that they can be prepared, I think we can see in this message a, you don't have to worry, I'm here to protect you, because you're mine, while I will destroy those that are not And I think that's a powerful understanding to have as we go into the book of Revelation. By the way, we're not going to look at these letters individually, even though it says Revelation 2 through 3 there. That's got all seven letters. We're not going to look at them individually. I do want to make mention that as each of those letters starts, John makes mention either of one of the things that Jesus has used or has been used to describe Jesus. The walking in the midst, the first and the last, the two-edged sword, the eyes like a flame of fire, or something that further describes Him, His care and His protection and what's prepared for us, the seven spirits of God. The Holy One, the True One, the One with the key of David who opens the Amen, the Faithful, the True Witness, the beginning of God's creation. These are all terms that are used to describe the One who is writing to these individual congregations. And I think we need to recognize that Jesus is all of these things to us. If we turn ourselves against Him, He will be fierce. And He will destroy. But as long as we walk with Him and we follow Him, He will protect us. We should never forget who it is that watches, who it is that will judge. The one who rejects me and does not receive my words has a judge. The word that I have spoken will judge him on the last day. Or in Romans 14:10, why do you pass judgment on your brother? Or you, why do you despise your brother? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. And a little expansion on that statement in 2 Corinthians 5, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one will receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. I want to suggest to you this morning, and that's what the bulk of our lesson is going to be talking about, or drawing from, maybe I should say, that the letters to the seven churches in chapter 2 and 3 of the book of Revelation are good places for us to go to get an idea of how successful we are as a congregation. Where have we succeeded? And where might we fail? Because there are two things that stand out when we read through those letters. And I think those two things stand out in the letters of Paul and Peter and various other ones that wrote to congregations, John being one of them as well. And that is that Jesus knows our strengths and Jesus knows our weaknesses. And when we go to look at those individual letters, I think those two things stand out. And so in considering that, what are our strengths that Jesus knows? Where have we been? What have we done? Where do we stand in our, I hesitate to say accomplishments, in our service before God? Well, I'll tell you something that stands out about this congregation. This congregation is steadfast and has not faltered. Paul told the Corinthian brethren, therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. This congregation continues to serve. Whether my being proud makes a difference to anyone or not, I don't know, but I had one of my proud moments back in March of 2020. When we had restrictions placed upon us and we started checking into about who was going to do what and when we were going to gather, if we were going to gather, and I heard from at least two or three of our brethren stated, no matter what, we're coming together on the Lord's Day to observe the Lord's Supper. And we did. About a month or half a month later, when I suggested, you know, I really need to do something more. I'm going to be up here. Nearly the whole congregation that was normally here for Bible class time was here for a Bible class on Sunday evening. This congregation has remained steadfast in their service to the Lord and helping one another to grow in their study, in their fellowship, and in their worship of God. And I think that's something that we need to acknowledge. We need to note, when Jesus wrote to those seven churches in the book of Revelation, He noted their strengths, and sometimes their strength was they didn't fall. You kept walking. His encouragement was, don't stop. Keep on. Even when it gets hard. I think Jesus is well aware and knows that this congregation doesn't compromise on the truth. Jesus gave us warning in Matthew chapter 7, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. False doctrine is not tolerated in this assembly of the Lord's people. It is dealt with. False prophets, Peter tells us, will arise among us as they arose among the people. They'll secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the master who brought them, who bought them, bringing upon themselves swift destruction. If we fall prey to those false teachers, then we receive the same destruction they do. And we stand against that. And I think that's something that, at least in our minds, needs to be counted in our column for good. We need to be careful. The evidence shows us that the individuals of this congregation don't believe every spirit. They test the spirits to see whether they're from God. But not only do they test others, they test themselves. They follow the advice Paul gave to Timothy. The advice we have there in 2 Corinthians chapter 13 as well. They do their best to present themselves to God as one approved. A worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly examining or handling the word of truth. What do they do? They examine themselves. Let's rephrase that. What do? We examine ourselves. Each individual is aware that the strength of this congregation to stand against false teaching falls upon us. Falls upon me and you. I'm convinced that a good mark, if we're making a list of goods and bads for this congregation, is that it is a shining light in the midst of darkness. Now, some might say, well, any sound congregation of the Lord's people is a shining light in the midst of darkness? And because our whole nation, our whole world is just darkness. There's no light in it at all. The only light that we see is the light that comes from our fellow brethren, our Christians who live across the world, who are standing firm for the truth no matter what's going on around them, and those congregations where they band together. But I submit to you that the light of this congregation has been seen. Folks come here because they know we stand for the truth. And I can say that with confidence because I think we've seen that in evidence in the last year. We're running about 25 to 28, depending on exactly who's sick and who's not. And about half of that is the group, are from the group that was here when I moved here in 2012. Now that picture I had on the screen a while ago, I had it kind of faded out. You might not see it very well, but there was about 36 people in there, and I think there were some folks missing that day. I know Brenda's not in that picture. I think she was the one taking the picture. But back in 2000, that was in 94, back in 2012, we were running about 35 or 40, maybe a little more than that. I can pretty much guarantee you Reuben's got a notebook somewhere that can tell you exactly what the attendance was on Sunday night and Wednesday night in that time if you're interested. So this congregation's been up and down attendance-wise, membership-wise, I guess we could use it. But it shines in the midst of darkness. We had families who came to us this last year because there were difficulties where they were. And they could see that we were a place, at least a place to check out. And what we've heard from most of the folks when they got here is, well, I'll tell you what, I don't know that I can express it much better than Brother Butler's expressed it. This is the friendliest group of folks I ever met. And I understand he's not just talking about friendliness. He's talking about fellowshipping together, people that are concerned about one another, people that care, people that are working in common for the cause of Christ. They can see the difference between us and others, and I know that because we've had folks who came here who were from different backgrounds, and when they saw and heard where we stood and what we were going to stand for, they didn't remain because they weren't interested in that. Or they were still trying to figure out what they were interested in. And if they're looking for truth and they've been here, they know they can come back here and they can find truth. Our love for God and our love for one another is evident. What is it Jesus said? He told his disciples, if you love one another, everybody will know that you love me. This congregation also communicates with one another so that we can help one another with our needs. And I know this passage, Philippians chapter 4, verse 14 through 16, is Paul thanking the Philippian brethren for helping support him in his preaching work. But the idea of what we're talking about is there. It was kind of you to share my trouble, and you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent help to me for my needs once and again. This congregation is willing and doing what they can to help those who have needs. I know there were things done when various ones in the country had hurricanes or floods or things of that nature. When we've heard, folks have heard if somebody had a fire, then there's things that have been done to step up, not just to help our own brethren, but elsewhere. But even in that, this congregation has helped preachers not on a continual basis, but have helped preachers in foreign countries from time to time as they were able. And I know there are some individuals in this congregation that help support some preachers on long term. That's an evidence of a group of people that recognize that there are needs that need to be met, and we're willing to do what we can to take care of those needs. So we step up to it. Jesus knows our strength. But we need to be very careful about straining ourselves too much to give ourselves an attaboy. Because Jesus knows our weaknesses too. Now, once again, I am no prophet. I am not the son of a prophet or the grandson of a prophet. I am not an inspired apostle, but I know there are things that we need to guard against. I know there are things that are weaknesses that we must constantly watch and strengthen so that they don't become failures. And I think when you read through the letters to the churches of Asia there in the book of Revelation, that it becomes evident that there's three ideas I want to look at as we finish this up in talking about our weaknesses that I think are evident there. And the first one is we need to be careful that we don't get comfortable. You know, contentment and security, enjoying physical comfort, free from vexation or doubt. That word vexation always gets me. Free from stress or tension. We get to the point that, hey, everything's going great. So let's don't rock the boat. In Acts chapter 19, Paul is in the city of Ephesus. He's teaching there. Some came stubborn and continued in unbelief. They're speaking evil of the way before the congregation. Paul withdrew from them and took the disciples with him, reasoning daily in the hall of Tyrannus. This continued for 2 years, so that all the residents in Asia heard the word of the Lord, both Jews and Greeks. And we read later on in verse 20, the word of the Lord continued to increase and prevailed mightily. Paul dealt with a lot of controversy everywhere he went, but we've got note of it, especially here in Acts chapter 19 in the city of Ephesus. And it's shortly after this that they have the great riot in the city of Ephesus over the teaching of Paul and how he's getting into the pocketbooks of the silversmith. And maybe that's why the gospel spread through Asia so much, because they had these difficulties and they didn't get comfortable. They didn't get settled in and everything's going along well and we don't have to push too hard. We don't have to work too much. Maybe that's why the gospel spread like it did. Maybe it would have spread anyway. But I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to make sure that we don't get comfortable. Just because we don't have some controversy or a problem right now doesn't mean that one's not down the road. I mean, in 2018, who thought 2020 was coming? You know? We need to constantly be on watch. I'm not saying we need to put a tack in our chair to make sure we get our attention and get up out of our chair every now and then, but we need to keep our eyes open. We can't just get comfortable and settled in and everything's going great and just, well, here's the second one, satisfied. Gratified to the full. I know some folks that work on the attitude that to make sure you don't eat too much, you should always leave the table a little bit hungry. I don't subscribe to that philosophy myself. But spiritually, and as a congregation, we need to make sure that we don't just get satisfied with where we are. We've got a nice building. The people in the community know us. Most of our members attend regularly. In fact, our members are attending more regularly than they ever have over the last several years. So we're not neglecting to come together. We're encouraging one another. We're preaching the gospel. We've got preachers in our background. Most of the ones that are still alive that have left here, they're elsewhere serving the Lord. I didn't write the number down, so I can't remember exactly, but in that picture I had up on the history page, there are at least 6 young ladies, some of them really, really young, who are now raising their own families or have almost finished raising their families in other congregations. At least 2 are married to preachers. And don't get me wrong, I don't mention preachers because that's some special thing, but it gives some insight into the attitude that they have toward the Lord. Are we 100% in that? No. Could we be better in that in the future? Well, yeah, maybe. If we don't get satisfied with what we've already done, if we don't become complacent, there's the third one. Unconcerned. I mean, we have folks visiting off and on. When folks travel and they want somewhere to go to worship services, they stop here. That may be due to social media and access to information more than us, in particular ourselves. But we can let those sort of things go to our heads and make us think, you know, we're just doing fine. If we just keep doing what we've been doing all along, everything's going to stay the same and we're going to be okay. If we push a little bit too hard, things might change and that might not be good. The problem is, that's not the strategy that God has given us. That you make it up to this point and you've got these things accomplished and you're at this level, so you've made it to the top, and so just stop and hold there. There's nothing in Scripture that tells us to stop and hold. In fact, Scripture tells us to feed our fire. These attitudes of complacency and comfortableness and satisfaction, they stifle growth. The Hebrew writer says we ought to keep working. Though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food, for everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, since he's a child. But solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. And we might look at that and say, well, I'm beyond the milk stage. I'm up into the solid food stage. And so I'm doing all right. And we miss the whole point of what the Hebrew writer is trying to say there. Our responsibility to God is serving Him continually. It's a continual process of growth. Growth is not going to come when we have the attitude of complacency and satisfaction. And with that kind of attitude, we're teaching the kind of attitude that's evident in the children of Israel in the book of Judges. When the Lord was with Judah and he took possession, and the people of Benjamin and all the rest of the tribes did not drive out all of the wickedness, but they got to this level of, we've got the land and we can eat off of the land now, so we're done. And they had to deal with those things all of their time. And we spent a lot of time going through the book of Judges. We understand the difficulties of that. Jesus tells us if we're not with Him, we're against Him. Whoever does not gather with me scatters. That means the guy sitting on the sideline, not doing anything, is as bad as the guy that's walking out there picking up the seed and throwing it out on the ground again, when they're supposed to be taking it into the grain. We must work the works of Him who sent me while it is day, Jesus says. Night's coming when no one can work. As long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. In John chapter 2, verse 10 and 11, we have record there, and it states in verse 11, this, the first of his signs he did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory. That was the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He continued to do signs until the day he died, and then his resurrection was a sign again. And then he sent apostles out doing signs even more so that people would believe that the message came from God. Jesus didn't quit even when he died. The apostles didn't quit even when he died. We can never be fully satisfied that we have done everything God expects of us. And I sometimes think the phrase in those letters to the seven churches that should affect us as Christians today the most of all is there in Revelation 2 and verse 4. I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Because Paul continued in the city of Ephesus, the word was spread throughout Asia, both Jews and Greeks. It was so powerful in the city of Ephesus that there were those who were followers of the magical arts that gathered all of their books and burnt them. And as a result of this, the word continued to increase and prevailed mightily, we read in verse 20. As Christians and as a congregation of the Lord's people, we have a responsibility to continue to grow like newborn infants long for the pure spiritual milk that by it you may grow up into salvation. And I think there's one of the keys we need to recognize. If we're going to grow as a congregation, it's going to depend upon each individual dealing with their situation. If you are not stretching your limits, the church is not going to stretch its own limits. If you're not pushing just a little bit more, the church will not move just a little bit further. We have a responsibility and a need to continue to grow and increase. And that need falls upon us as individuals. It's not something a congregation can do separate and apart from the individual. And we need to recognize that. We can't sit back in our recliners and take a nap thinking we've got it all going on. As soon as we do that, it's like pulling the oars in and hoping that we keep going upstream. It's not going to work. We need to continue to look because Jesus is always watching. And He will judge. He knows where we are. And He knows where we could be. And where we need to be. Take a long look at yourself as an individual. Take a look at the congregation as a whole. I am a simple man. You may see things in this congregation that I don't, that I miss. If it's something the congregation needs to be aware of, let's make sure the congregation knows that we work together to solve any issues or difficulties, any areas that need improvement. But most of all, look to yourself. Examine yourselves, Paul said, whether you're in the faith. And if you find this morning that you are not in the faith, we urge you to step up and enter into the faith. Give yourself wholly over to the Lord. Confess your belief in Jesus, and you can be buried in baptism for the remission of your sins, having turned away from all the things of the world. And you can have hope of eternity when this life is over. If you've done that and you recognize you've not been as diligent in serving the Lord as you ought, then pray to God and ask Him to forgive. He's promised that He will. And if we can assist you and help you in that, certainly we are here to do that. Why not come while we stand and sing to encourage you?